Hi. Okay, it's 5:05. I think we have everyone here. Nice to meet you all. My name is Alex Dergachev. I work at Evolving Web. I've started the company with Suzanne Kennedy here a few years ago. And today we'd like to tell you a little bit about a project we worked on for a good chunk of the last year called allhotels.com. It's the client was Travelocity, which is very exciting for us. I just want to acknowledge one thing before Suzanne sneaks out, is that she put together much of this presentation, and there's a case study that will eventually come out of this. So, although she can't make it because she's doing the training, she's with us in spirit and in slides. Okay, yeah, and she said she can talk more about the multilingual stuff tomorrow in her session, which I'm supposed to promote. I mentioned this because she knows quite a bit more about actually Drupal site building than I do. So I'm pretty good at the technical stuff, but in terms of the Drupal site building workflow, she's our point person. So the reason we're presenting is because Travelocity is such a huge name. You guys probably seen the GNOME commercials traveling the world. And it's really, really a global company, and it was a very exciting opportunity for Evolving Web to work with them. Just how global is this company? We're Evolving Web, so we're in Montreal. We went for Drupal Camp New York last December, and that's where we met Travelocity's head of online marketing. So that was in New York. Now we had team members in San Francisco. That was the main content editor. And the technical architect was in Berlin. All of the business team, basically people who are designing, administering the project, they're based in Dallas, Texas. That's the headquarters of Sabre, which is the parent company of Travelocity. And they have a giant campus. I mean, it's a really, really big company. I think Sabre used to own the online, the travel agent reservation system, and it was at some point a sister company of American Airlines, and I think at some point they split, but it's really a huge name in travel. So that was most of it. And Oklahoma was where the product manager, who's our point of contact, was. And last but not least, speaking of gnomes, there's like tons and tons and tons of developers and content and marketing people. All over the world, particularly in Bangalore and I believe in Uruguay. And so that was on one side of the engagement. And on the other side is Evolving Web, which is not entirely represented here, but it's fairly representative. We're just a company at the time. We were just short of 10 people. And there was 6 of us who were actively involved in the project. So just to sort of set the stage here, I think what I'd like to talk about is two things. One is the things that we learned working with a much bigger company and on a much bigger project involving a lot more people. So I'll discuss a few things about that. And obviously, we're a fairly technical Drupal shop, and when somebody comes to us and says, I need a CMS that can do X, can you guys do it? Can Drupal do it? We said, of course, yes. So we'll talk a little bit about what Drupal did and what we had to make it do. And just to make sure everyone's clear, so Travelocity is kind of the parent company, whose parent company is Sabre, and I don't know how far it goes. All Hotels is their startup, so you can book a hotel through Travelocity.com, but they decided to start a new brand called AllHotels.com to compete with Booking.com and Priceline and Hotels.com, which I think has been advertised quite a bit. And there's various different marketing and business strategies. And so they decided to do a startup kind of within a bigger organization. I think the main difference was it would be like Booking.com, where you wouldn't pay in advance. You'd give your credit card to reserve, but you wouldn't pay except to the hotel. And that would allow them to keep a much bigger inventory of hotels and sort of compete on a different way than Travelocity's hotel reservation system works. So that's all Hotels.com. And what we did is not all of it, because a hotel site is fundamentally a shopping site and integrated with not just e-commerce, but a huge hotel inventory system. So that team of developers in India had been, for a year before that, working on it, and probably for 10 years before that, building out the underlying technologies for Travelocity.com. We were brought in to build out a component of AllHotels.com that was basically everything but the shopping and pages. So this is, we did the CMS portion. So what do they want to accomplish with a CMS, and why do they need us? Why do they need a CMS? Why do they need Drupal? So if they had so many developers working on a Java-based shopping engine and Solr actually based search engine they presented on their work at the Solr conference. So with such a big team and with such a traditional development model that they had, they could only move so fast. And they needed to move quickly. So their marketing guys were like, well, we need this kind of articles and this kind of landing pages and these kinds of keywords and these languages, and we need it, you know, by quarter two of this year. And their development team in India is like, that's great. We have an issue backlog. We're busy until 2012, which was not really what the marketing guys needed to hear. So then came the question, well, fine, we have a great team that we're still building up, that we're still kind of getting to a point where we can work through that pipeline, but that doesn't mean we can afford to wait a year and a half. We've got to move on the marketing side, on the content side, much quicker. And so they chose Drupal as an open source CMS. They specifically heard about its multilingual capabilities, which was quite important in this project. I'll talk about that in a bit. They knew that it was really modular and extensible, which would be quite important for the kind of customization and integration work that we'd have to do with it. They also knew good things about its scalability. A lot of technical people in this room will say Drupal scalable, haha. But there's obviously different use cases, and if you're trying to, you know, clone Facebook in Drupal, you're going to run into some scalability issues. But if you're trying to build a really use it as a CMS, there's a lot of really great use cases, and there's a lot of caching techniques and deployment techniques which we took advantage of to make sure that it scaled. I mentioned that it was multi-domain and multilingual, and we had to do quite a bit of integration with their existing team's work. I mean, that was really a significant portion of the project. Part of what's important, what will be discussed, is that in the CMS feature set, there's a first of all, we had to import many, many thousands of articles in many languages, seven, or I think it was six to begin with, and growing. There was landing pages, which I'll show examples of in a minute, which were meant to be customizable, so that you can choose what kind of content appears on a given type of landing page. We took advantage of certain modules like panels to allow site administrators to tweak it and to optimize layout. Okay. Another important aspect to them was with all these articles, they wanted cross-referencing, so they really wanted to leverage the Apache Solr integration, which first to allow users to explore these articles, and also to cross-reference them by saying here are related articles based on certain keywords, and in general integrate search between sort of tie together the user interface for search for the CMS content and for the hotel. So doing one would send you to the other to sort of allow users who were drawn in through the content to jump over to the hotel search. I think that was the main funnel flow that they were interested in. In terms of their SEO concerns, or their goals, it was really a content-driven project, and it was also a multi-domain, multilingual-driven project. So I mentioned that there's seven languages, and I think they knew that in terms of their competitors, that the other markets, the non-English markets, weren't being served nearly as well. There's actually, I think at launch we had over 20 domains, maybe even 25, so it was quite ambitious. I I think if I had to do that over again, I would I would have pushed back harder. Fortunately, Drupal's architecture is flexible enough, as many of you, the developer types know, that you can have the same Drupal instance with the same Drupal content serving, being served from multiple domains, and it being aware of those domains and making adjustments to the way it presents it, so to which content is presented, which language is presented by default, and any other kind of specific requirements you'll need to have to tailor the experience for the user specifically for that domain, while at the same time having one CMS and being able to manage it that way. The other thing is worth noting is that the taxonomy was quite important because it integrated the two sites. We had a global taxonomy of every city, province, country, region, state in the world, a continent. I think it jumps around. And so we had to pull that into Drupal, and I'll discuss that a little bit more. And that was the same taxonomy that was present in their hotel booking system, and those were the keywords that they really wanted to target. So that was an important part of the site. And as you can imagine, for example, Drupal could generate XML sitemaps for that really easily, because once you import it into Drupal, you can take advantage of that functionality. So that even their India development team, for their pages that weren't managed by Drupal, asked us to sort of extend the XML sitemap module a little bit so that we generate not only our own taxonomy term XML sitemaps, but also theirs. The two different systems had to be cross-linked quite actively, so there's a lot of synchronization in terms of the link logic. And also analytics. As you can imagine, with this many domains, languages, they have affiliates that we need to track. So with a company that big, with that many expected visitors and that much investment in the project, there's quite a bit of an analytics component. And in terms of the third area is the integration with their non-Drupal system. I think I've mentioned that we had to use a cookie to synchronize languages and currency selections. So if you ask, I'd like to browse this content in Spanish, when you go to the hotel booking pages, he's got to remember that. Same thing with currency. We had to get the links right, per domain, per language, per content. And the other aspects of it is we needed to maintain a common look and feel to make it seamless to the user. We use SSI for certain chunks of HTML that they managed, and I think they use SSI for certain chunks of HTML that we managed. And this worked because we had a proxy configuration set up so that all initial requests would go to their server. If it was a shopping request, it would stay there. If it was a CMS request, which means it matched a certain set of paths, it would go to Drupal. That was actually kind of geeky, but that was actually kind of challenging to set up because Drupal likes to own all the requests after a certain folder. So we're like, okay, fine, go to allhotels.com/CMS or /Drupal. They're like, no. Okay, how about cms.allhotels.com? No. So we needed to map, set up the proxy rules on their side and on our side, the Apache configuration and rewrite rules and custom URL inbound in such a way as to allow Drupal to serve certain paths with no indication, like so basically /articles, so URLs of that sort, /browse/find, all of the URLs that started with that would be treated as Drupal paths and passed along to Drupal. On the other hand, Drupal also had to be deployed under /CMS, so that /user, and basically in all cases except the whitelist had to be served under /CMS, so Drupal would be sane and know how to generate links. So we had to bend over backwards quite a bit to get Drupal to integrate tightly, but we did achieve that common look and feel, and we achieved a rather seamless integration for visitors. And I think there's also an SEO component as well. If we had put it under a separate folder or under a subdomain, all the keywords in the articles that they were writing and putting into the CMS wouldn't be as effective. The other thing worth mentioning is that over time we've realized that we need to, you know, pull in data about their hotels for contextual information. So when you're viewing an article, they wanted to push out, oh, here's some 3 or 4 hotel sales that are going on for this location to draw the user in, and vice versa. So when they're looking at a given hotel, they wanted to say, oh, we've got articles that talk about this destination that this hotel is at, and maybe push them to other hotels in that region that they were promoting. So we went back and forth a little bit about the different approaches we took. It's interesting to note that at the end we settled for using Solr as a kind of a homebrew API server, because it, with a bit of customization, it allowed us to push our content to Solr and not have to worry about any performance implications of when their server would decide to crawl our site to get all that data. Because as you guys know, if they decide to do this as we didn't know how their developers would choose to do it. So if they would choose to do it as a batch job or something like that, all at once, and they wanted to get every single article that we had, and that wasn't for some reason in the cache because the time had elapsed, the site could really be pounded. With Solr, you really weren't too worried. It was sort of designed to just very quickly serve that information. So that worked out fairly well after we made certain customizations to Solr configuration to make sure security is followed. Great. So the other part of what I wanted to discuss is that working with a big organization like this, with so many people involved, was a huge coordination challenge. If you saw my horde of gnomes picture. For the first couple of months, I mean, we really weren't sure exactly who our primary point of contact was. We were figuring out how to ask for that, and then they were figuring out how to send somebody our way. I guess that had to do with the fact that it was a marketing-driven project, and yet at the same time, it wasn't the marketing guys who were going to like help us do the technical integration with their shopping engine team, or even necessarily supervise the content creation, because that was their content team. So at first, it was us in a role of tying everything together and dealing with 10 different heads and making sure that, well, if we promised to do something to one person, the other people knew that, and vice versa. So what that meant, though, is it was quite challenging to nail down the project scope at the beginning. I think when they came to us a year ago, we said, oh, well, the feature set, you know, this is just a static-sounding CMS at first with some integration. The feature set seems quite limited. Yeah, we can do this in 2 or 3 months. No problem. On the other hand, when we realized better exactly how many articles we'd have to import, the fact that they were still being written in progress, the fact that the people who were giving us the designs were not the same people who were talking to the article people, that was a huge challenge, and it was us running around connecting everything, and so we've learned a lot in that process of first how important it is for us to be incredibly organized and play the role when necessary, like to be able to step up and say, guys, here's what we all want to achieve, here's what needs to get done, here's Evolving Web's role, here's not Evolving Web's role. And let's figure out right now who's going to take responsibility for each portion. Another thing we learned is to demand that we're not the ones who are, despite the fact that we're effectively site integrators and kind of pulling the project together, it shouldn't be our job to manage all of their different departments and employees. So we've learned to delegate that to our primary representative more forcefully. So we did that. And in general, so we became better and more organized as a result, and I feel the people that we were working with did as well. So that was, I think, a huge stepping stone for our company in terms of working in a project at that scale. I mentioned consistent user experience before. So the content was a major challenge. The other thing is the scalability requirements. I mean, with all the, just to give you a sense of how this was maybe a little bit more challenging, even from a technical cache, like even though it was quite static in a lot of ways, because of how aggressive they were in making sure that these were really seen by search engines and had a lot of content, we had Google crawling our site on a regular basis. There would be, if you include all the domains and all the languages and all the articles and all the landing pages, I mean, we're getting into crawl up, the whole site would be in the hundreds of thousands of page views or more. And Google would basically try to get the most latest version of everything. So the Drupal really had to be able to step up and serve uncached content. So first we would first use Nginx and Boost to cache content. Then we went to Varnish later on, and that helped for things that were repeated requests. We had to do quite a bit more optimization in terms of how quickly our pages were being generated for requests that weren't cached. And so we did a number of things in that direction. The other important aspect, which I think I missed on this bullet point list, but I'll jump ahead to since I have a slide at the end, is when you're working with a project of that size and a team of that nature, you're not just building a Drupal site like you would otherwise. They had an existing set of environments and an existing deployment and testing schedule, and we had to keep up with that. So I think, yeah, we had our own dev, they had their own dev, that was fine. On a monthly basis, we would push a cert. I think there was a cert 1 and a cert 2, which we'd kind of flip between. On a set schedule, we would go from cert to stage. That's where the final testing was done. And then from stage to prod. When we pushed to prod, we followed the protocol of getting in at 7:30 in the morning and doing all the dependencies. So like, do they have to deploy first this month, or do we have to deploy first, depending on the changes that were introduced and how it affects the site? And so we'd all mutually follow that procedure. We would have about a two-hour window with which to deploy successfully and test. And if that didn't work out by either party, mostly them, we would have to roll back and try the next day. So that again was a bit more of a disciplined, rigorous kind of deployment process than we've had to do before. It's also worth mentioning that we'd have to pull stuff in from the DB, from prod, back to the various environments on a regular basis, and in order to make this work, we wrote a lot of different scripts that helped automate that process. We used best practices like features and putting as much of things into code to try to keep it manageable. And the other thing that's important to note is we really invested a lot of time in monitoring, because over the course of the year we were expected to maintain our servers, and from their perspective, the CMS going down meant that the whole site was down. So downtime really wasn't an issue. So one of our developers, Jonathan, he probably spent a cumulative couple of months of his life figuring out Nagios and Nsynga monitoring scripts, writing them, tuning them. He's got probably 20 custom ones to his name. And so that was an important step for us. Furthermore, because we had so many different servers to take care of all the time and synchronize, we invested a lot of time in Chef. I think maybe in the past you've seen some more blog posts or presentations on configuration management with Chef. And for the developers here, it's a set of tools that let you script all aspects of the server configuration. So you basically go on Amazon or Rackspace or just get an Ubuntu CD, get a standard Ubuntu system set up, and then you run this your Chef scripts. And this program deploys every single customization, configuration settings, user accounts, all kinds of optimization tweaks. It deployed at some point. It deployed Drupal for us. So any aspect of server management, before we would just rely on documentation to try to make it be reproducible and sane. But of course, I think you guys know very well that documentation tends to become out of date really quickly. And if your documentation is code, And in order to do something, to install a new program, for example, on your server, you have to update the configuration script. That really ensures that you have it. And once you invest that effort into putting into it, it's not that much harder to write a few lines of Ruby for a chef configuration parameter than it is to just write a few lines of configuration for something or other. And yet, the reproducibility is incredibly valuable. Okay. So let me see if I can jump. So that was, I wanted to quickly touch upon the challenges of working with such a, this isn't going to work, too many slides, with a bigger team, and how much we've learned on that front. I'll probably have a chance to come back to it, but just in general, before I talk about this specifically, the Drupal side of things, does anybody have any questions about our experience and Lyric? Right. Well, the good news for us, for Evolving Web, was that it wasn't just our challenge. Their development team had the same challenges to solve. Their solar indices would contain a set of representative prices that were fairly accurate but not entirely accurate, and they were used for dateless searches. So if you do a dateless search for, like, I want a hotel, but not today or tomorrow, but just sometime in Montreal, it'll give you this hotel name that it knows it sells and its price. And those searches were easy and fast and worked. On the other hand, when you want to start entering the sales cycle, you want to get the user to say, I want a hotel next week in Montreal. And when you do that, you've got to give them up-to-date numbers. And so I know their team had extended solar to integrate it with their up-to-the-minute inventory. And so they actually did that integration on the solar side. When we pulled in the hotel's listing pages, we didn't pull in the data from the dated prices because that was something that would just be too expensive. So we dodged that one. like I said, the cool thing about working with a team of a bit more maturity is that we didn't have to set their expectations about what technology can easily and can't easily do. So they didn't make us do something too crazy. Any other questions just about working with a big organization? Anyone? Okay. The other thing I wanted to highlight was that we used Google Docs to track outstanding work issues, and that worked really well because we can just highlight the fields that we wanted. At a certain point, we reached where we had one or two main points of contact, and so they respected the conventions we did. And Google Doc was really the quickest approach to present as much information as possible. Obviously, our development team doesn't take instructions from Google Docs. We use an issue tracker. We use one called Redmine. It's very similar to Track. It's open source. And in the course of the project, we actually wrote a set of a Redmine plugin, and I think we recently, just as an exercise, ported it to a Drupal plugin that uses Google Data APIs or maybe Google Apps APIs or something like that to pull in certain rows or all rows from a Google spreadsheet in a read-only format, so that when you're looking at an issue, you can actually see that the client-facing spreadsheet that talks about this issue and is tagged with that issue number, here is the client notes for that date. So that really helped us make sure that what the project managers were telling the clients and the client's feedback was readily accessible to the developers. And that really helped. The other thing that we should mention is managing all the assets, all the articles that they've sent us, and the translations into various languages was a pretty huge task. And moreover, we had received many different versions of those articles. And at some point, we just decided to sit down and write a set of scripts that would parse them and clean them up into the canonical format that we asked to receive them in, and so what they should have sent us, and we would actually tweak this script from time to time. So after that script ran, it would be ready to be imported by our standard Drupal import script, and then we would maintain those cleaned up articles in a Git repository that actually the client had at some point even asked for access to, because that became the master source for them as well. So it was a good move. It was worth the trouble. And if you guys are interested in the plugin that I just mentioned about integrating Google Docs and Redmine, you can check out our corporate blog. Tavish, one of our developers who worked on it with me, wrote up a blog post about it. There's lots of other aspects to the project management approach, but I don't think I'll have much time for that. Here's a slide that shows that's their homepage design on their left. That's a high-level landing page for different travel guides by theme and destinations on the right. And so on the left wasn't Drupal. On the right was. They asked that their homepage was still managed by them. Everything else except the shopping pages and the homepage was Drupal. And as you can see, it's really similar, really seamless. So first we received a set of mock-ups from them. And then eventually, after we made Drupal look more or less like it should pair mock-up, and when we started doing integration testing, we identified differences, and we tweaked it so that it was really seamless. In terms of the content types that are most prominent for the CMS, it was list articles on the left. So list articles are great because they're really easy to write, and you can put into their titles the most searched keywords, and they're easy to translate. In the middle is an example of a longer article. So if you really want to be something of high interest to users, you can give them something interesting to read about a given destination. And on the bottom here is a typical landing page, which had images, sometimes videos, and a combination, although you can't see it from the screenshot, a combination of list and featured or long articles. And the combination, the landing pages were highly customizable, and their layouts were managed through panels. Let's see what else I should mention on the content import. So yeah, there was many tens of thousands of nodes. I'm not sure at this point what the exact number was. Per language, we used the migrate module and schema and table wizard with that. We also had to import not just nodes, but that global destinations taxonomy, which was 25,000 places or more. It was a hierarchical. It was quite dirty. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. It was not as clean as I expected, but I guess that's the reality of trying to manage a database of of so many places. And so I mean, I already mentioned that we used the version control system to track of the cleaned up files. In terms of the administrative UI, this was Drupal 6, but we used the admin module to give it a bit more of a Drupal 7 look, and that was really appreciated. We used the Rubik theme, so I think that comes with the admin module. And Suzanne pointed out that the save buttons go on the right and the bottom to make it more intuitive. Because of the complex relationship between landing pages and articles, we leveraged the modal frame API, which is the successor to the Drupal 6 pop-ups module, so that when you have a landing page and you have a landing page has a node reference to an article, you can click on, and it's usually in Drupal stock. It's kind of like an autocomplete text box for a node reference. But thanks to this module, there's a little button that says edit next to it, and then a pop-up comes up, kind of Drupal 7's overlays, that lets you edit that node, that linked node, right there. And that's when you have so many reference nodes, that really helped. Because we had such a high list of global taxonomies, and because that was so important in terms of the site organization, we used and extended the hierarchical select module, and that's what you kind of see circled on the right, is that first you choose world, then you choose a continent, then you choose a country, and then you might go to states. Otherwise, can you imagine a drop-down list that's the full length? And we also couldn't do an autocomplete just because so many places in the world are named the same, and so you really need the full hierarchy to identify them uniquely. Yeah. Ha. did I mention that their data wasn't as clean as you'd like? So first of all, I guess we were lazy, but in order to keep consistency with their system, everything was supposed to be under world, and then we went back and forth on removing that first, you know, taxonomy term zero, if you will, and like, what's the point? We kept it, one, to be consistent with them, two, because it actually helped us, because so many of our landing pages were, you know, panels with contexts that are driven by taxonomy. And so I guess we could have had one that would have no filters or something like that and be a special case. But instead, architecturally, it just made more sense to say, if I want to see beach-related articles in no destination at all, so show me the most interesting beach articles in the world, the argument to that page would be nothing, but in our use default argument handlers or what have you, we would say, if nothing, it means world, and do the filtering based on that. So it made the system a little bit more consistent to configure. So it made our life easier and their life easier. But yeah, and actually, if you did click on world, you would see other options like Caribbean. So apparently Caribbean is not in the world. That's something that, yeah, we try to push back on them to clean up. And on our initiative, I know they spent like 100 hours or more with various people, and we put in dozens of hours cleaning it up. But at the end of that process, we kind of said, look, guys, we appreciate that you send us the updated file, but it introduces as many errors as it fixes. So let's roll back. This is still a problem that Travelocity as a company is, I know, working hard at it, just because this is the same global hierarchy that their Travelocity.com's engine uses. So I'm sure they've got their top people working on it. Another aspect of the administrative user interface is we heavily use the Views Bulk Operations module. So it allows you to create a view that presents certain nodes, and it presents it in a display with checkboxes. And once you select which nodes you'd like to act on, you can choose an operation such as publish, unpublish, delete, change language, anything you can imagine is probably already exists. And if it doesn't, you can write all of 10 lines of code with a couple of hooks to add your own custom operation. And that was really important for managing the content, especially given the number of languages we had involved. And we needed to provide administrative UI that makes it really clear what you have and what you're missing. I already mentioned that one of the taxonomy vocabularies had 22,000 terms, which is pretty crazy for Drupal. It crashes a number of core admin pages, just crashed because they tried to put that into a select box. So we downloaded this hierarchical select module, which is gonna, you know, do a piece at a time, right? So that's gonna be the right approach. Wrong, that crashed as well. Even though it displays them one piece at a time, it still manages it all as one big array in memory. And did I mention that it's 22,000 terms in 7 languages? Did I mention that each one of these terms, I think that's the next slide, maybe? There. Each one of these terms have term field. So I guess the fields we had were, I don't remember exactly what they are. But let's see, destination ID. So that's not our Drupal ID for the term, but that's their taxonomy term ID, and it was important for building links and the like that we retained it. Obviously, it's positioned in the hierarchy. Whether it was specifically popular, so certain destinations. In order to prevent ambiguities, there's a Paris, France, and a Paris, Texas, or something like that. So Paris, France would have a higher popularity weight. That was a custom column that they provided us in order for us to channel those searches to Paris, France more. So we had to keep track of that. We had to synchronize all kinds of friendly URL slugs in order to make sure that the slugs that Drupal was using for those terms were exactly the same as the shopping pages were using, and other related things. So lots of data, and we had to put a number of patches through in order to get the site not to choke on it. It was a year ago, so. But, I mean, we went, I think we disabled one of the, we just literally, so one, I mean, we were quite practical about it, so there was one term management page that maybe listed all the terms or something like that without pagination. I don't remember exactly. And we just form altered the offending thing to be gone, and we just put a message saying, if you want to manage these terms, use the taxonomy manager module. That one has a hierarchical Ajax-driven drill-down approach. So that was enough to replace the core admin pages, which were crashing. For on the node form itself, where you saw that screenshot, which we tried to use the hierarchical select module to drill down through it, that was crashing too, and we put a couple of patches through to the hierarchical select module that made it more efficient and handle it better, because that approach fundamentally should work, but the way they coded it didn't. So we fixed that up. It wasn't insurmountable. All right. Aside from the global destination hierarchy, we also had various hotel facets, like 5-star, 4-star, luxury, blah, blah, blah. And that was integrated in the marketing strategy and in the cross-linking strategy. And we had themes as well. And destination terms, yeah, so we did machine imports of all these things. And updates. We worked quite hard to use views and panels to have this hierarchical driven landing pages for each taxonomy term. So you'd start off with Canada on the left, then you'd pick, so you'd see, if you're looking on the left there, you'll see that there's Canada wide, so Vancouver and probably Toronto somewhere, and somewhere in Montreal, destination pages. And here are individual articles for them. And then these things prompt you to drill down further into the hierarchy. And these are links back to their shopping pages for that. And so once you go to from Canada to Ontario, it'll look something like this. So same thing, really hierarchical, but just starts at this level and goes down until you get to Toronto, at which point if there's articles, it highlights them. And if there's shopping pages, it highlights them. So... in theory, it should be not too bad. In practice, doing filters based on children is far from trivial, and we spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out SQL joins to get it to work right. And then after we did that, we had to do the sorts based on that popularity column that I mentioned earlier, like the Paris, Texas versus Paris, France. So again, that really made us write custom sorts that worked in that context and extend views. I already mentioned that we had to use custom fields for that. In Drupal 7, this would be kind of built into core, but in Drupal 6, there's a term field module, which works surprisingly well. And we used the taxonomy management module to have this replacement for the core term management UI that works with a large hierarchy of vocabulary and has a lot of other cool features. When we displayed a landing page or an article, we would have some clever tricks to figure out what location it was talking about, resolve certain ambiguities, and display a little map that once you click through, would actually go to their shopping pages, which had a lot more features and actually displayed hotels there. This is something we talked about extending, but we realized it would also mean duplicating a lot of the work that they're putting into their map UI, and so we decided to, for the time being, let them handle it and think of clever integration later. You mentioned the languages. Anyone who's building websites should know that making it multilingual doubling the languages makes it more than twice as hard to do. So Suzanne can talk a little bit about that, but it's just makes it really hard to keep your content in sync. And so we had to build all kinds of UIs and checks to manage that. We had coded a custom JavaScript language switcher, which was consistent with the one that they separately coded for their shopping pages. And as I mentioned before, when you chose it, not only would it tell Drupal to switch languages, it would also store a cookie so that would get passed along if you left our pages and went to the shopping pages. And a similar thing with currency as well. Interesting thing to note is that there's two Spanishes here, Spanish Spain and Spanish Latin America. Again, we had to bend over backwards to make that work out because we had the additional requirement that their articles, so their user interface strings were different across these two versions of Spanish. Their many, many thousands of nodes and articles were not. I mean, they just didn't have the resources to go and retranslate everything just for the very subtle differences. So again, we almost had to fool Drupal. So when it comes to the UI, it's one thing, and when it comes to the language, it's another. But Drupal is quite extensible, and if you're fairly confident with how it works, you can extend it pretty well. Let's see. Suzanne wanted to point out that we did a lot of work in order to get views to be more multilingual than they are in core. If you guys are familiar with the Views UI, Views is a module that lets you build those listing pages, and typically you have to give a path, and there's usually only one path. It doesn't say English path or French path. It just says what path do you want it to be. So we built a custom extension that allowed you to integrate paths for different languages, and it was a custom display type, I guess, multilingual page as opposed to regular page. So that I'm not sure if we ever got a chance to release it, but that was pretty handy. Another aspect of what we did is there's lots of domains and this mostly the same content, but certain differences about what's highlighted and what's visible to target certain audiences. Obviously, there's a default language per domain that's different. We had some metadata that was important to keep per domain, so we decided to naively, perhaps, to keep it to create a domain node content type and assign the fields that they would give us. So you'll see a Google Analytics ID and their site ID, which was their internal other analytics tools and integration, and which content it's in. There's a default currency and a default language, and at the moment it shows it the same, but for certain domains, certain languages made sense and others didn't. So allowed languages for that language which are in that domain. And, later on in the project, we actually managed considerably more metadata in this thing because they liked the user interface and they wanted to use it for more data. And that's challenging because, I mean, we had to work extra hard to make sure that this stuff didn't, first of all, didn't get blown away because it was fundamentally site configuration rather than content, and it shouldn't appear in search results. So I would think hard now about making them nodes, but we did, and then we had to, for example, export them to code, like using a node export, and make sure that those were tracked really heavily and wouldn't get lost or tampered with. So that was something that worked out fairly well in the end. I mentioned that we use panels quite a bit, both for the fundamentally for the different kind of landing pages. In general, and also we used a customization, if you will, of the panel's node module to allow us to build a panel without content, but with let's see how to phrase it. A given node would have a node reference to one of these, say, 5 or 6 or 10 different panel layout nodes, which would then be used as the panel to render that node. So if a given landing page should be a landing page of type 1 or type 2, and they wanted to switch around the UI, instead of literally having to edit all kinds of panel configuration settings per node, which is how the panel's node module works in Drupal 6, all we do is we say, don't worry, just choose which layout you're referencing. So we made a kind of custom panel extension that allows for that use case. And that worked fairly well. It's pretty easy to do. We did a bit of customizations for providing a search. We didn't do too much fancy stuff, but fundamentally, when you were searching through your articles, and so on the top you see a custom facet block. I mean, it's not really just styling. It's the related destination is a node reference field, which we compute if it's not present based on certain relationships. So that you can facet by articles that are referenced by a given destination or reference that destination. We also had a, I'm pretty sure that was custom. So you, if you don't see it in this screenshot, but it would say filter by destination hierarchy, and then you can drill down at every level. So that was a custom block that we needed to make. And we used, at the time, the Apache Solr module. Now we would use probably the Search API module in 7. And we, yeah, we also use Solr, this thing, or subset of it, as an API for them to query our data. We used OpenSearch, not that important. Okay. I talked about the integration with the booking system. Yeah, one thing that we did for integration, and we never really solved this problem, but I just wanted to point out, is on both their pay, on their site and our site, we have this custom JavaScript search box that would kick off a dated search and would probably go to them, to their, well, it would go to their shopping pages and their search pages to see hotels in Montreal. And this was something that they were constantly tweaking. I mean, it was an interactive, a very important part of their site, and they were constantly changing it. And we had a lot of trouble actually keeping up. I had suggested a couple of times that they provide us just an embeddable widget. Like, you know, you can embed a YouTube video, right? So why don't you guys embed a, give us a snippet of JavaScript to put in that'll be hosted by your site. And that's how I would have done it had we been the owners of that code and their website had integrated it. For various logistical reasons, that didn't work out. So almost every release, we would have to, like, look at their patches for their JavaScript and you know, did they introduce autocomplete or something? And we'd have to recode our widget. So it doesn't seem like a big deal, but it's one of those things that kept on haunting us. And with the benefit of hindsight, I think I would have been a bit more aggressive about getting maybe more of their senior tech architects involved in identifying the right way to solve this problem to make sure that you don't have two development teams playing hide and seek or cat and mouse. Yeah, so that was a interactive little JavaScript widget that we maintained and built. This is what a screenshot looks like when we were pulling in those dateless searches. In this case, they asked not to even show the price, but sometimes we did. We used the features and strong arm modules quite a bit to put stuff into code. Suzanne would have talked about theming more. I already talked about the different environments. And no Drupal case study would ever be complete without a list of modules used. So I present that to you. Let's see if I missed anything. OpenSearch was to relate it to keep saved searches. It gives you an RSS feed of all the search results for a given search query, so we use that. Everything else. There's a bunch of SEO modules and tweaks that we used and extended and wrote our own custom flavors of. So I think that's the presentation about the Drupal side of things. And it was a really great project to work on, and we learned a ton. Great team to work with. So thanks, guys. If you have any questions, I'll take them. Go ahead. So the first build-out phase was starting last July, and we launched at the end of October. So that was a four-month. Our company was around 10 people in size, and it was 100% undertaking, kind of like 50 hours a week. We really worked hard at it, and we exceeded their expectations of delivering, not because they thought we couldn't do it, but they certainly thought they couldn't do it. So that was a huge, huge effort, and they really appreciated that. After that, we kind of went into maintenance and further development mode starting in November, December, and I think it was roughly just under 200 hours per month, which I think was a good number for what they wanted to do. Right. So I hinted at it a little bit earlier. We're using Rackspace Cloud for the hosting. We've got all kinds of different servers depending on the different environments. I also didn't mention we have a an sandbox server for them to use, and there's a failover server as well. We're using their their load balancer to just allow us to easily follow through. It's not. We experimented quite a bit with high availability. We spent a lot of time that we couldn't really build them for because we didn't deploy it on figuring out Linux HA and how to get one server once it's kind of inaccessible to, or have a group of servers and when one of the main one is inaccessible for the other one to automatically pick it up. But that's really tough, especially with MySQL and database integrity. And in the end, what we realized more was just having a hot spare that was, you know, synced up like with MySQL replication. And so once we get a monitoring alert, if all we have to do is saying, oh,